Hello and welcome to the 538 Politics podcast. President Trump's Senate impeachment trial began on Tuesday with debate focused on the rules of the trial going forward. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's proposed rules passed on a party line vote early Wednesday morning after Democrats' 11 amendments all failed. Those amendments were aimed primarily at allowing for witnesses and admission of new evidence during the trial. Starting today, Wednesday, the two sides, Trump's legal team and the House impeachment managers, will have 24 hours each spread out over 3 days to present their opening arguments, after which the question of new witnesses and evidence will come up again. So we're not planning to cover each day of the Senate trial here on the podcast, but we do want to lay out the political considerations at play and what to expect over the coming days and weeks. And here with me to do that are senior writer Perry Bacon Jr. Hey, Perry, how's it going?
Hey, good to be here, Galen.
And senior writer Amelia Thompson DeVoe. How are you, Amelia?
I'm great, thanks.
Thanks for joining me this morning. We're recording Wednesday morning for the record. Perry, let's start with you. What did we learn about the politics of this trial after a day of debate over the rules?
So Senator McConnell's original rules package basically would have said there are 2 days for each side, meaning you were probably going to have 12-hour days starting at 1 p.m., so you're going to end at 1 a.m., which happened less than anyway. But so you saw during the day that he sort of softened on that idea. He also is going to make sure that the testimony from the House side is included from the beginning. And so that tells me that McConnell is being moved by Republicans like Susan Collins and Cory Gardner, who are more vulnerable electorally in 2020. So there are some signs that McConnell is adjusting his plan for those members. That said, these are small alterations. So far, the general idea from McConnell is he wants to limit the number of witnesses probably to zero and make this trial as quick as possible and as least damaging for Trump as possible. And so far, based on yesterday, it appears that his 52 Republican colleagues are largely going to go along with him in that process. So you saw yesterday basically the outlines of what I thought would happen, which is that the Republicans want to shape this trial in a way where there's no witnesses, there's not a lot of new information that comes out that's damaging to Trump. And I think so far this looks like that's going to happen, although it's important to note Mitt Romney and Susan Collins particularly said they were going to stick with the Republicans on these initial votes, but they said after the two sides make their arguments, when witness discussion comes back, Romney's been pretty inclined to say he's going to push for witnesses. I take him at his word on that. Collins has been softer, but said that as well. But the key question is, are there four Republicans for witnesses? And the answer that appears to be no, but that'll be interesting. And then if there are four Republicans, that'll raise the question of if John Bolton testifies, I'm sure Republicans will want someone like Hunter Biden, who looks bad for the Democrats, to testify as well. So so the upshot is I'm not sure. Yesterday sort of starts where we were at the beginning, which is that I'm not sure this trial will end up with witnesses.
At this point, we saw a lot of party line votes on Tuesday and into the morning on Wednesday. Is the starting assumption here, Amelia, that we'll also expect a party line vote for the final vote, which is whether to acquit or remove President Trump from office?
Perry has been doing some really good coverage of where all of the individual senators might be on this and what their considerations will be. I think certainly, though, if we don't see a party line vote, it seems likely that it'll be very close to a party line vote. And, you know, one of the things that I was really struck by in this first initial day of kind of opening debate and opening arguments was that what we were hearing from Trump's legal team was an extremely Trumpy and aggressive opening argument. And, you know, I mean, obviously these are Trump's lawyers. He's presumably very closely watching these televised proceedings and sort of influencing the legal strategy. But I think it was still striking because, you know, going into this, one of my questions was, okay, we haven't heard a formal defense from Trump yet. That's not because he hasn't been given the opportunity to. His lawyers could have appeared before the House Judiciary Committee and they chose not to. But we're going to be hearing from them for the first time now. And are they going to go all in on this sort of Trump did nothing wrong, it was a perfect call, this is a witch hunt type argument? Or are they going to modulate a little more, you know, and make the kind of argument that you might have heard, you know, for example, in the Clinton trial, or, you know, a trial where there had been a little bit more admission of maybe this behavior was inappropriate, or, you know, not just declaring that nothing bad happened. And so that kind of argument would be more, this behavior doesn't rise to the level of an impeachable offense, and here's why. And it was really an extremely aggressive defense of the president that we were hearing in just those sort of first few opening shots of debate. We're obviously going to be hearing a lot more of that from Trump's legal team.
Does that affect how Republican or Democratic senators behave throughout this trial, or the ultimate conclusion that they come to? Does it make it any more likely for a couple moderate Democrats to switch sides, or a couple moderate Republicans to switch sides, the way that Trump is arguing this case?
I think we have to go with the fundamental that lawmakers are going to decide this based on their own electoral situations. So in general, I would suggest that it's very unlikely any Republican will vote for impeachment, because I don't think that makes a lot of sense in a party where 10% of people support impeachment. I'm not sure. We can discuss Mitt Romney individually, but the incentives are not aligned well for most Republicans to vote for impeachment, just purely because it's opposed by almost Republican voters almost uniformly. So I'm not sure that Trump's legal strategy affects that at all. On the Democratic side, you have a few senators, I think most notably Doug Jones of Alabama, who I think probably the electoral incentives are to vote against impeachment because he lives in a conservative, very pro-Trump state. So I would say that when we talk about this impeachment process, I think the vote has already been decided. We're more discussing what is the process in which Trump is acquitted than is Trump acquitted. And so to some extent, like Trump's lawyers, you know, not giving particularly good legal arguments doesn't matter in terms of the vote count. I think the only question here is, like, we sort of have a lot of evidence that Trump tried to get the Ukrainians to investigate the Bidens. That's not really under much dispute. And so the real question here is, like, the Democrats know Republicans have to vote to acquit. And what they're trying to do is make those votes, make this process as painful as possible for a Susan Collins or a Cory Gardner. So you saw yesterday, they had 11 different votes, I think, all of which made Susan Collins and Gardner and Martha McSally and other Republicans who might lose in 2020 have to vote a lot of times pro-Trump. I think if you look at the polling, it's pretty clear most Americans, even a sizable number of Republicans, support having witnesses at this trial. So basically the whole thing we're watching here is Democrats trying to make the acquittal process really painful for the Republicans. And on that end, I do think Susan Collins would probably prefer if Trump's lawyers were a little less bombastic and a little bit more modest in their arguments. But she's not going to get that from them, obviously. She knows what she's dealing with, I'm sure.
On the Democratic side, who's feeling the most pressure? Other than Doug Jones, I'm thinking Joe Manchin or somebody even like Kyrsten Sinema. What's the cross pressure for them?
I don't think Sinema or Joe Manchin have much pressure at all, because they're up for re-election not until 2024. They just won their seats, so I don't know that people are going to... I mean, it's like a vote you cast now being considered 5 years from now, like, matters to some extent. And Sinema's also in a fairly liberal, like a swing state. So I think my understanding of Sinema is more like a centrist person. I think she might temperamentally want to vote to acquit because she's a centrist and thinks Washington is too partisan. I think her actual problem in terms of voting to acquit would be maybe drawing in some kind of, you know, building up the left in Arizona, getting them angry at her to where they might challenge her in a primary. Even that, I think, is way off. I think the only person among the Democrats who has any real electoral problem here is Doug Jones.
All right. So, Amelia, you both laid out that it seems a pretty predetermined process. So what are the goals of the two sides? You mentioned that Trump's team was making a pretty bombastic and Trumpian argument. Why are they doing that? What's the purpose in the way that they're presenting the argument?
Well, one easy response is the president is watching, and or we can at least presume that he is watching, and that's the kind of defense he's offered throughout. As Perry mentioned, even in the face of pretty overwhelming evidence that he was trying to get the Ukrainians to investigate the Bidens. He has denied that he's done anything wrong, and his sort of defense throughout the process has been along those lines. And so, you know, in some ways, it would have been more surprising to see Trump's lawyers come out and make a defense of him that wasn't pretty bombastic and aggressive. And, you know, for the Democrats, it's funny to watch. We were talking about this on the live blog a little bit yesterday, but it's just kind of easier to be on the defensive in these sort of settings because you can just kind of complain about the process and try to, you know, obviously the Democrats are trying over and over again to force these votes that could look embarrassing for Republicans because they kind of go against public opinion on the witnesses. And they're kind of, you know, aligning the Republicans with these bombastic arguments from Trump's lawyers. Like, I think one of the challenges in watching this trial is the feeling that the outcome is predetermined. And so how much does all of this sort of negotiating and rhetorical flourish really matter? I mean, I think it does, if, you know, for no other reason than we heard a lot yesterday about sort of how much do these rules hew to the Clinton impeachment rules, and do they diverge and do they not? And that's a problem because the Clinton impeachment rules are getting held up as this kind of bastion of fairness, which is pretty funny to hear Democrats doing in 2019. I think they would have been surprised to hear that back in 1999. So I think basically the point being that precedent matters because the Constitution says very little about how impeachment trials are supposed to go. And so, you know, what happened in the last impeachment trial could matter, you know, if there is another presidential impeachment trial down the road. We could be hearing about what happened in the Trump impeachment trial and there were no witnesses or the arguments were spread out over 3 days. And so I think it matters from that perspective. And as Perry was saying, you know, it's just this kind of final rehashing of where everyone stands on this and sort of a last attempt to try to shape the public narrative, try to score political points. I think we can guess from the way this has unfolded so far, public opinion has been incredibly steady on impeachment throughout the process. So, you know, I think our best guess is that it's probably going to remain steady, barring some remarkable developments as the trial goes on. But, you know, these theatrics do matter in some senses, even if we have a sense of the outcome being a little bit inevitable or preordained.
And Amelia, as far as public opinion goes, I'll just mention that according to 538's impeachment tracker, today, January 22nd, 50% of Americans support impeaching and removing the president. 45% of Americans do not. And that includes 87% of Democrats, 47% of independents, and 11% of Republicans. So that gives people some sense of the starting point as this trial gets underway. I want to talk a little bit more about whether there will or won't be witnesses. But first, today's podcast is brought to you by ADT Commercial for Business. It's not politics as usual these days, and it's not business as usual at ADT. ADT Commercial serves businesses ranging from mid-sized organizations to large-scale enterprises. Think of them as national security advisors just for your company. They provide comprehensive security, fire, life safety, and risk management solutions. Professional-grade systems for commercial-grade businesses. Businesses choose ADT Commercial. The Fortune 1000 trust ADT Commercial for highly complex, scalable, integrated solutions. And if you're looking for a great partner to upgrade or take over the monitoring and service of your current system, ADT Commercial can help to install and maintain large-scale and multi-site business dependably. Businesses choose ADT Commercial for their complex security solutions. Visit ADT.com/538 to learn more. Again, that's ADT.com/538. Today's podcast is also brought to you by Lightstream. The holidays are over and it's a brand new year. If you're thinking about the high interest credit cards you used over the holidays and the bills that will be coming, here's an idea to ease your mind. Pay off your credit card balances and save with a credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream. Roll multiple credit card payments into just one payment at a lower fixed rate. Lightstream's credit card consolidation loans have rates as low as 5.95% APR with auto pay. Plus, there's absolutely no fees, no application fees, no origination fees, no transaction fees, no prepayment penalties. The application is so quick. quick and easy, you can apply right from your phone. Just for listeners, apply now and get a special interest rate discount. The only way to get that discount is to go to lightstream.com/538. That's lightstream.com/538. Subject to credit approval, rate includes 0.5% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/538 for more information. We're back, and of course, we don't know what we don't know, but Democrats are focusing so much on whether there will or won't be witnesses or new evidence in this trial. Both Perry and Amelia, you have mentioned that it's in part political, right, to just shape the process in the public's eyes as unfair and driven by Republican concerns for the president. But from the point of view of getting new information, what kinds of things could a Mick Mulvaney or John Bolton testify to that we don't already know?
Well, there's this one sort of big piece of the puzzle that has still been missing, which is, did Trump deliberately condition aid to Ukraine on this investigation of the Bidens? And, you know, we have a lot of evidence that kind of strongly suggests that there was a connection between those two things. But the people who are closest to the president and can presumably sort of speak to his state of mind and his intentions and who were actually, you know, in the case of Mick Mulvaney, executing his decisions or, you know, perhaps pushing back against them in John Bolton's case, it's a little unclear what was happening there. Those people we haven't heard from. And so I think if those people were to testify and were to testify in a public setting, which is sort of important because I think it's important to remember that in the Clinton impeachment, there were witnesses, but they didn't testify publicly. So there is an option to, you know, potentially have witnesses be privately deposed. And so we wouldn't actually get to hear from someone like John Bolton. And I think that could potentially kind of dampen perhaps the effect of what he would have to say. But, you know, those people testifying and sharing what they know could be a pretty big deal. And so, you know, I think it's understandable for McConnell, who plainly just wants to get the trial over with as little damage to Trump, is really fighting having witnesses tooth and nail, even if John Bolton were sort of counterbalanced by someone like Hunter Biden, who might draw attention to a part of the narrative that isn't as good for Democrats.
You said that it could be important, but is there, you know, Perry, is there anything that John Bolton or Mick Mulvaney could say that would change the equation of the trial so much that Trump might not be acquitted?
Yeah, I mean, I assume there are certainly things that Trump could do that would, you know, that would be so problematic that they would change the dynamics here. I don't know what, I don't want to get into, I don't want to speculate too far in terms of what is the worst thing Trump could do. So I don't want to say that there's nothing they could say that could change anything. That said, I think the broad outline, I mean, first of all, I think if Mulvaney testified, was called in front to testify, he would invoke executive privilege, like, after he gave his name, pretty much. So I don't think he would say anything anyway. And then it'd be a different dispute about, is he required to testify? And, you know, is the president's top aide required to discuss conversation with the president? That's a hard question. It sounds like Bolton wants to talk. I think there'd be objections on executive privilege grounds. I also think in Bolton's case, he has leaked a bit. So we do have some sense, like, the fact that Bolton thought this was a quote unquote drug deal is sort of well known because it's been in the New York Times. Been on television. Fiona Hill said it in a hearing. So Bolton saying it himself will be different and unique, I guess, but I'm not sure. I've left this process being skeptical more and more that the importance of public testimony as opposed to private testimony is what we think it is, because we just had a bunch of hearings in the House that were very gripping, very public, and moved no one as far as the polls show. So I'm just not sure. So I think that public testimony is important. I think testimony is important. There are good reasons to require testimony. There are reasons to not allow the president to sort of stop all investigations of him. That's this idea that it'll, like, move the public more. And I would say on the Democratic side, too, if, like, Hunter Biden testifies, I don't think that'll, like, end Joe Biden's campaign either. So I don't think these testimonies will have this kind of impact that we are, there's sort of implied in the discussion about the testimony.
I mean, if it became the one-for-one strategy on witnesses, if they found four Republicans in favor, it sounds like right now there's only two, Susan Collins and Mitt Romney. Would it be like a good deal for Republicans or Democrats to say, hey, we're going to have both Hunter Biden and John Bolton testify?
I think the big question is, like, you get John Bolton to testify, as Perry was saying, you know, what is he going to say? The stuff that has already come out is pretty, you know, potentially damaging, but it's already out there. And perhaps hearing it out of John Bolton's mouth would make a difference. I think I'm kind of on the same page with Perry that I'm a little skeptical that sort of simply hearing him say what we've already heard other people say he said would sort of shift the public narrative in any meaningful way. If John Bolton is sort of prepared to testify that, you know, yes, I saw, you know, this aide being deliberately conditioned on the investigation and I tried to stop it or whatever, that's potentially something that might be worth it for Democrats. I mean, I do think there's a danger for them in offering someone like Hunter Biden to testify because it, you know, there's really no evidence that Joe or Hunter Biden did anything really wrong. You know, I think you can debate whether the son of the vice president should, you know, sort of be doing the things that Hunter Biden did just from an optics perspective. But I think maybe the risk is that it creates kind of an equivalence between the much more serious things that Trump is accused of doing and the debate over Joe and Hunter Biden. That being said, I don't think it's that big of a risk for Democrats to have someone like Hunter Biden testify. I guess I'm just not sure. You know, I think there's a pretty decent possibility that even if they got John Bolton to testify, that he would not offer the kind of perspective that would be sort of sufficiently damaging, sufficiently dramatic to change the narrative at a point when all the evidence we have is that public opinion is really, really baked in on the issue of impeachment after, you know, 3+ months of investigation and hearings, et cetera.
I was sort of imagining, let's say if John Bolton testified that Donald Trump had a plan for the Ukrainians to investigate Biden, for the Chinese to investigate Warren, for the North Koreans to investigate Buttigieg, for the French to investigate Klobuchar, and so on. Yeah, I'm giving a ridiculous example, because I mean, yes. So are there things John Bolton might know that, because John Bolton was the National Security Advisor, he's involved in a lot of policy across the government. Including Ukraine, are the things that he in his realm of knowledge might know that would be really earth-shattering, really big news, and maybe make even Republicans rethink impeachment? Yes, but I'm guessing if the range of things he says is what we kind of already know, which is that Ukraine aid was held, but only Ukraine aid, that doesn't really change where we are that much.
Yeah. So is it fair to say, short of that, that we should be viewing what we see over the coming week and a half, potentially plus, through the lens of building a case in the public's eye leading up to 2020, basically just trying to do damage to either side in the general election?
I don't think the Republicans are trying to do damage. I think they're trying to minimize damage. So I guess it might be a different question. Like the Republicans, I don't think... Like, even if Hunter Biden testifies, if Hunter Biden has been interviewed about this stuff on TV, it sounds like his general comments will be kind of along the lines of, yeah, I did something that wasn't great, and so on. He didn't do anything illegal. And I do think the Democrats are spending the next couple of weeks trying to really raise the stakes of this here, both for Trump, but also for the Collinses and the Gardners and the McSallys.
Just wrapping up, what should we expect from this process over the next week and a half or so, Amelia?
I mean, I think we're probably going to see a lot more of what we saw on Tuesday, which is a lot of acrimony, a lot of sort of elevated and aggressive rhetoric from both sides, and attempts by the Democrats to sort of keep McConnell from making this trial as short and narrow in terms of evidence as possible. And, you know, attempts by McConnell to wrap this up quickly and make sure there is as little damage to Trump as possible. And next week, I think, will really be kind of the next round of serious drama, because that's when this vote on the witnesses happens. And that's when people like Romney and Collins are going to have to decide where they're going to land on that. But, you know, at this point, I think a lot of what's happening does seem to just be the sort of rhetoric and the scoring of political points. And I'm not expecting right now, obviously this could all change and I'll have to eat my words, but, you know, sort of big surprises in terms of how the trial unfolds over the next couple weeks.
One point in all this is that I think that the most important things are going to be happening off stage, off camera. Like, this is like the most important things I think that happened yesterday were like Susan Collins pushing McConnell to change the rules slightly. And that, so I sort of think the arguments from the lawyers will be things you sort of already know. And in fact, yesterday, a lot of things that were said in the House Intel hearings a few months ago. So I think the negotiations between Collins and McSally and the more moderate Republicans on one end, and the other end, I assume at some point, if it comes down to Hunter Biden testifying, the senators like Dianne Feinstein that are close to Joe Biden may be hearing from Biden or his camp, people close to him, saying, hey, we don't really want this, and can you? So I think the negotiations kind of offstage will be more interesting than what's going on in front of us.
All right. Well, we will watch it all play out. Thank you so much, Perry.
Thank you.
Thank you, Amelia.
Thanks, Galen.
And before we leave you, listeners, I want to let you know that we have a live show coming up in Manchester, New Hampshire on February 9th. That's just 2 days before the New Hampshire primary. It'll be a lot of fun. You can get your tickets at 538.com/live. Again, that's 538.com/live, and we will see you there. My name is Galen Druk. Tony Chow is in the control room. You can get in touch by emailing us at podcasts@538.com. You can also, of course, tweet at us with questions or comments. If you're a fan of the show, leave us a rating or a review in the Apple Podcast Store or tell someone about us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.